Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope that your week is off to a good start. I hope that your family and your friends are staying healthy. We are happy to have you here with us today. You know, hopefully you survived 420 this year on Monday.
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
I think we're parked, man.
And now, in your smoke-filled stupor, we have another very important national day because, yes, today, April 22nd, is Earth Day. Yes, each year on April 22nd, National Earth Day campaigns around the globe promote different ways to save the Earth. You know, since its inception, the organizers promote events educating the public about a variety of subjects. I mean, anything from climate change to air pollution to water pollution, recycling, composting, renewable fuels and power, carbon footprints, efficient cars, you know, things like rainforest, any way they can think of to, you know, help the Earth and also to make themselves feel better than the rest of us.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Don't be so sensitive. So make sure you are staying home and not contributing to the smog problem today, I guess. Is that a problem for any of us? I mean, we're all pretty much staying home at this point. I know there's some people that, you know, got to go into work or whatever, but like for the most part, we're all staying home. I mean, come to think of it, with no one going out, is Earth Day like losing a little bit of its kind of traction? I mean, I know here in Denver, our air quality has to be getting better. I can see it. We don't typically now have the smog hanging over the city that we usually have on like a typical weekday. I mean, less traffic, there's less airplanes, there's just less people going out. Our air quality has to be getting better, doesn't it? See, this is one of those positives of this whole thing that we might not think about, but I think Earth Day this year, we're actually doing some positive things. We're getting the air a little bit cleaner. Look at us being all glass half full. That's just how we roll here at the Dose. Speaking of perspective, we do also need to wish a very happy birthday to a former NFL quarterback. You might remember a guy by the name of Jeff Hostetler, who turns 59 years old today. Yeah, happy birthday to Jeff Hostetler. Of course, Hostetler actually took over for Phil Sims during his time with the New York Giants. And you might remember he was the winning quarterback of Super Bowl 25 against the Buffalo Bills. Now, here's the weird thing to think about. I would imagine that if Phil Sims would have won another Super Bowl back there in New York, he would have been a lock for the Hall of Fame, wouldn't he? I mean, he had already won one Super Bowl back in Super Bowl 21. And then if he would have won another one in Super Bowl 25, he is getting a bust in the Hall of Fame. You win two Super Bowls, especially with a New York franchise? Phil Sims is getting in, but instead he's injured. Hostetler gets the win and he gets it over Bills quarterback Jim Kelly, who is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But when you think about all this, Jeff Hostetler kind of throws a wrench into that whole, hey, I don't care how you were, titles mean everything argument, doesn't he? Because I mean, Jeff Hostetler has more Super Bowl wins than Jim Kelly, than Dan Marino, then Fran Tarkington, and Warren Moon. In fact, he has more than all those guys combined, so he must be better than them, right? Or maybe that's a little bit overrated. Hey, happy birthday, Mr. Hostetler. I hope that today, on your 59th birthday, you're doing well. And more importantly, I hope you have retained that glorious mustache you used to have. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite sports mustache of all time. We'd love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. I know that I told you this the last few weeks, but I know that everyone is in quarantine. If you're bored, if you need to interact with someone, please drop us a line here at the Dose. Send whatever you have. Sometimes it just helps to reach out and have interaction with another human being. Maybe you have some feedback for the show. Maybe you have a question for the show or a subject that you would like us to talk about here on the show. Or maybe you just want to interact. Whatever it might be, reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Also, remember, we are now placing a video portion of the podcast over on YouTube. So be sure you go over to YouTube, find the Daily Dose over there, and subscribe to our Daily Dose channel over there. Thanks to everyone who has gone over and been watching the last few weeks. We are putting that new video up of the podcast every single Wednesday when the podcast goes up. So make sure that you stop by and check it out. In fact, this week, we actually did something different. We actually put a Daily Dose top five over there. So you might want to go over and check that out. Hey, as long as we're all stuck at home, we're all kind of in quarantine mode, and you're doing your shopping online, you're buying from Amazon, you might even be getting some groceries online, make sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear so that you have something to wear around the house. Everybody needs some Daily Dose gear in their life. It's going to brighten your day to get that Daily Dose gear. Right now over at tpublic.com, they are doing sales every single week, and they are making sure to keep the people over there employed, keep the workers employed. So hey, if you want to go over and contribute a little bit, buy some Daily Dose gear over there. We have our standard Daily Dose gear. We've got our Daily Dose iTeam gear over there. We also have our Daily Dose Faster Than Domestic Violence stuff over there. You can get t-shirts, you can get hoodies, you can get sweatshirts. You can pick the color that you want those to be in. You can get coffee mugs, things for your desk, things for your office. Maybe you're working from home and you need to kind of, you know, spruce up that office area. Make sure you stop by tpublic.com, search for Daily Dose, scroll until you see our logo, and there you can get exactly what it is that you need. Real quick, before we get into the show, just wanted to say thank you for those of you that listened to the podcast we did last week with basketball coach Russ McKinstry. You know, we did something a little bit different. Instead of just talking sports and what's going on in sports and right now what's not going on in sports, we actually discussed the kind of pandemic of fear that people are feeling right now. And I heard from a number of people that said, hey, I really appreciated that. That was really something that I needed to hear. And it was something that was good for me. I sent it to some friends. We had some new subscribers. We had some new people kind of listen to the podcast that maybe wouldn't normally listen to a sports show last week. And it was because, you know, it was just something a little bit different. But thank you for those of you out there that shared the show. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you know someone that is struggling, I would encourage you, send them that link to that podcast, because I think there's some things out there that are very, very beneficial to people that are struggling. And I think it's understandable for us to struggle, but I also think you don't need to live your life just so worried that you can't function right now. Understand there are steps that you can take to alleviate some of that anxiety, some of that fear that we're all feeling. There are steps you can take. And last week on the show, Russ McKinstry stopped by and we discussed some of those things. If you need that, make sure you go back to April 15th show and share that with someone. But that's not what we're going to do this week, because today on the show, we're actually going to be back of more of our, you know, typical nonsense that we have here at The Dose, because we are anticipating the 2020 NFL draft beginning tomorrow. And I know with the state of the world today, I mean, who knows? But the NFL has insisted they are going to go forward with that yearly tradition of selecting the top college players for each of those professional franchise team rosters. So we are going to be doing our best to predict the top picks in that draft. And hey, it's not going to be easy because we're not really getting much information from teams like we usually do, but we will look very, very deep into our Daily Dose crystal ball, and we will bring you our 2020 Daily Dose NFL Mockery Draft. Plus, we do have some breaking sports news we need to get to today, and we will have a Daily Dose top five for you as well. So we have a lot to get to today. Let's go ahead and jump in and let's start off in the NFL, where we actually had some big news come out yesterday. It seems the New England Patriots are making a trade involving retired tight end Rob Gronkowski. Yes, the Patriots are sending Gronk to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to reunite with quarterback Tom Brady. The Buccaneers will get Gronkowski and a 7th round pick in this year's draft, and the Patriots will get a 4th round pick in this year's draft. Now, Gronk does still have 1 year and $10 million left on his contract. That is why a trade actually had to be made. I know he said he was retired. A trade had to be made because he still had a deal with the Patriots. But there are a few things to think about when we look at this whole deal. First off, I look at it from Tampa's position as, hey, they want to get another weapon. But you think about it, they've already got O.J. Howard. They've already got Mike Evans. They've got some talent down there in the receiving core. Can they get Gronkowski back up to weight? We know that he had taken off a lot of weight since he had stopped playing. And you know that Gronk and Brady love to play together. Great deal from the Buccaneers' perspective. As long as Gronk is healthy, he can pass the physical and everything goes well. That's a great deal for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On the other side, man, the New England Patriots and their fans have got to be in full, complete meltdown mode. First, the quarterback in your franchise history, Tom Brady, leaves. He goes to Tampa? He goes to the Buccaneers? In what world does that make any sense whatsoever? But you talk yourself into it and you say, well, yeah, but you know, Tom's, you know, past his prime. He's not quite as good. Sure, he was our golden boy and he won a lot here and everything, but hey, he wanted to go on and play. We got to move on without him. Belichick has the controls. Okay, as painful as that is, and that had to sting like a lot, then you hear rumblings. Hey, Rob Gronkowski kind of sounds like he wants to get back into football. He kind of sounds like he wants to play again. Okay, so we lost Brady. Brady's old. Whatever. We'll move past him. We're going to get... Wait, Gronk's going where? He's going to the Buccaneers too? You just know that Patriot fans have to be out on a ledge right now, just freaking out. But here's the crazy thing to think about. As bad of news as this is for New England Patriot fans, you know who has to be even more devastated by this whole thing? Imagine right now, WWE executive Vince McMahon. Because remember, his XFL thing was cruising along pretty good. Also, he had signed Rob Gronkowski to be one of his actors or whatever. Now with the whole virus thing, the XFL has tanked. Looks like it's probably never going to come back. And Gronk is going back to football when he was supposed to be over there in WWE. I mean, Vince McMahon has to be really, really upset. He has to be really, really sad right now. Or acting like he's sad right now or whatever. I don't know how that all works. I know that stuff is fake.
It's still real to me.
Are his everyday emotions fake? Like, is that just how he lives his life? I'm not sure exactly how that works, but I know wrestling fans are not happy right now. Because you know, they're like, hey man, you know, Gronk had the belt. I don't know what they're going to do with the belt now, because Gronk had... Yeah, I'm not sure how official any of that acting stuff is. I'm not sure it's really that legit, where you're like, well, now what do we do? Well, you could just make up another storyline and give it to someone else the way you gave it to Gronk. It's not going to be that hard to maneuver, I don't think. Moving over to the NBA, of course, we should be having the NBA playoffs right now, but those are off. So instead, we got what was probably the biggest sports news story that we've had over the past month or so, because ESPN debuted the beginnings of a 10-hour documentary on Michael Jordan. They showed us the first 2 hours on Sunday night. The Last Dance is a rare inside look into Jordan's world. It shows, you know, some revealing details. It shows some stories of that final season of Jordan with the Bulls. Hey, there was a lot of jealousy. There was a lot of infighting within the team and within the front office of the team. And it ended up leading to the demise of the Chicago Bulls. And I sat and I watched the whole 2 hours because honestly, like, what else do we have to watch right now, right? But I was very, very interested to see what is it they're going to show? How are they going to show this? I wanted to see because I followed that team very closely. Obviously, in that era, you grew up, you watched Jordan and you watched exactly what he was going to do. But I think the thing that stood out to me the most out of those first 2 hours, when we went back and we watched Michael Jordan and we watched some of the things that were going on in those first 2 hours, the biggest thing that stands out to me is his competitiveness. His competitiveness at everything. And I truly think Michael's insane competitiveness is what kind of gets lost in the translation the most. For the older generation that is trying to explain to the younger generation just how great Michael Jordan was, I don't think you can say, well, you got to understand how competitive Michael was. No, everyone's competitive. We understand. No, you don't. Because the younger generation, they just put it on YouTube. They just watch the clips and they go, well, I mean, he didn't even shoot that many threes. I mean, he had Scottie Pippen. And it looks to me like his teams were just better than everyone else. But they can't grasp the fact that Jordan just completely refused to lose. He just found ways to beat you. And no, I don't just mean in the NBA Finals where he went 6-0. I mean just like in practice. I mean like in an exhibition game over in France or in a December game that meant nothing against like the Los Angeles Clippers. In games, he always had that mindset of this might be the only time that the fans in this arena get to see me. I will not allow them to say they saw me on a bad night. There's no way that's going to happen. And that is the one thing that I think is really, really tough to replicate in modern players and even players who now are kind of being anointed as the next great thing or maybe better than Jordan. Because I look at them and go, oh, you mean the player that sits out every third night? Yeah, I'm not sure he can be in that class. Or the player that quits in the playoffs or in the finals when things aren't going so well and they just ask to come out and they don't want to play anymore? Yeah, I'm not buying that. I mean, you can if you want, and you can if you don't understand how competitive MJ really was. And we saw some of that in those clips. Yes, hey, big surprise, Michael was mean to some of his teammates. You see that in this documentary. And I bet over the next 4 or 5 weeks, it gets a lot worse. But understand, when you see Michael being mean to his teammates, that is why Scottie Pippen developed into one of the all-time great players. Because I promise you, he wasn't that way when he got there. He was forged by steel, by Michael making him be better. That is why guys like Steve Kerr and John Paxson and Bill Wennington or Luke Longley, that is why they didn't dare screw things up late when they got the ball. They made sure to make the right play. Because if you didn't, you faced the wrath of Michael Jordan. You know, I have a feeling that J.R. Smith would have probably known the score in the NBA Finals had he played with MJ. Because Michael would not allow you to be unaware. He would have done one of two things. He would have gotten a lot smarter, or Michael would have broken him and ended his career. And hey, we saw him do that to other guys. We saw him do that to teammates. We saw him do that to opponents. Just end your career. I mean, it's interesting to me watching those old clips. They are showing clips of games, sometimes playoff games. And I'm watching Jordan and Pippen full court trapping. It's like the first or second quarter. Can you imagine a player doing that today? Even if their coach told them to, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to move you guys up and have you just run kind of a full court trap. See if you can't slow down their point guard, slow them down from getting into their offense, make them milk a little bit more of that 24 second clock. The players today would be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Are you out of your mind? I'm not running around like that. I've already played like 55 games this season. Now it's the playoffs. You really think I'm going to run around in the full court and trap and press? I'm not doing that stuff. But Michael did it all the time, and his teammates did it. And you know what? They dared not say no to it, because you wouldn't look at Michael and be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Again, he would have ended your career. One other thing we are reminded of just in these first two episodes and watching this doc, and if you haven't watched it, I would encourage you to do so. The Chicago Bulls' current day woes are 1,000% karma for the way that era ended. Because the front office and owner Jerry Reinsdorf, they all thought they were smarter than everyone else, and they thought, hey, it doesn't really matter what players we have. We know how to pick the players. We can figure all this out. They no longer wanted Phil Jackson. They thought they could do away with Scottie Pippen. And hey, if Jordan goes out, that's fine. We'll find someone else. And they have been floundering ever since. And it's also interesting because Michael even calls it. They even ask him, hey, what about being involved in a rebuild job? And Michael says, yeah, you know, the Cubs have been rebuilding for 45 years. And everyone laughs. But you look at the Bulls now and you're like, they've been rebuilding now for what, the last 20 years? And they don't show any signs of life. They might be rebuilding for a much, much longer time still to come. You know, we did get some other NBA, sort of college basketball news last week. Jalen Green, the number one player in the ESPN 2020 recruiting rankings, announced late last week that he will forego playing college basketball and instead will join the NBA G League Pathway Program next year. And I've already started to hear it. Hey, this might be the end of college basketball as we know it. I mean, I've already heard major sports networks, major sports figures starting to spin that story to us. Hey, is college basketball on its last legs? Should we be concerned that we have seen March Madness for the final time already. Yeah, not quite yet. Yes, it might be a little bit disappointing that the top player in the country has decided to go to the G League instead of attending college. But I'm actually fine with the top players going to play professionally right out of high school. I think that kind of is their constitutional right. But I do also think if you go to college, then you have to stay for a few years. So I think it's good for kids. I think it's good for college basketball. And I do think it probably is going to be good for the NBA eventually. Might take some time, but eventually it will be better for the league. But here is the other side. Here is kind of the other side to think about. The G League is upping the money offered to elite prospects. It was $125,000 for the five-month season when that select contract path was introduced back in 2018. But now they're talking about giving bigger money to guys like Jalen Green. Much more attractive money for 5 months of basketball. And then you could go play in the NBA. And hey, with the uncertainty of what's going to happen in college basketball, maybe that's a good route to go right now. But understand this. They don't have unlimited money. They can't give every kid that wants to go to the G League instead of college a big, huge contract like they did Jalen Green. They don't have that kind of money. Remember, he is the top-rated player in the country. So hey, they had a little bit of money for him. But most kids aren't going to get that kind of money. And why do I just know? There are going to be a ton of kids now lining up to try to go this route. Hey, it's not going to go quite that well for a lot of you guys. I'm sorry, but it's not. Now, here is another problem. One, like I said, most of you aren't going to get that much money. And two, please remember this. It's the G League. It's not the NBA. You're not playing in Boston and LA and Miami. You're not playing in those markets. You're playing in like Fort Wayne and El Segundo and Sioux Falls. It's not going to be a glamorous life. You're going to go out there and have to earn your money playing in small towns, in crappy gyms, and probably riding the bus a lot. Oh, and also, keep this in mind. Every player in the G League is hoping to make a name for themselves. And if they make it at your expense, hey, all the better. I think it is good for these kids to have options available to them. So, hey, if I can't go to the NBA, then I don't go to the NBA. That's okay. I don't have to do that. I can go to the G League. I don't have to go to college. If my family needs money and I have to go get a job and this is my trade, I play basketball, then I should have an option for me to go make some money and help my family out. And then eventually I get to go to the NBA, hopefully. But understand this, going to the G League is hardly guaranteed success. If you think college basketball is going to be over now because this one kid jumped, I don't think it's going to go that way. I don't think college basketball is over quite yet. I think we're still going to see a very, very good product over there. Hey, I hope that this whole situation with the G League, I hope it helps some kids. I hope it gives them some options. Hopefully the G League grows and makes that a more viable option for the kids who need it, but that we don't have a line of kids going over there and throwing their lives away, trying to find an easier way to get through college basketball. I don't think that would be an ideal option. Okay, coming back, we are going to be getting you ready for the 2020 NFL draft. Yes, I know it is a strange time right now, but hey, the NFL is plowing ahead with that annual draft, and we, for one, cannot wait for it. We are actually going to have something to watch in the world of sports. When we come back, we are going to be previewing what is, without a doubt, going to be one of the most memorable NFL drafts in history. So we have been doing this now for a number of years. We do our best to predict exactly what will happen on NFL draft night. And every year, it's really, really hard. The draft is going to be held virtually this year, with each team drafting basically in their own seclusion. No one will be making face-to-face contact. It will just be over the internet. Now, trying to picture what each team will do and who they will fall in love with and what stupid things that players could do in the time leading up to this draft, it's always really, really tough. But this year, it's even more challenging because teams haven't been able to do all that much in the way of the interview process since that NFL combine that took place back in April. I mean, you're not seeing all these guys do those pro days where they go out and throw against no one and, you know, talk to the coaches and talk to the scouts. We're not getting that kind of thing this year. In fact, I have even heard some sports experts saying that the NFL should just postpone the draft because, I mean, hey, they haven't had a chance to prepare quite as thoroughly as they usually do. So maybe we should just kind of push this back to July or August or something like that. Yeah, I don't agree with that. When you say they haven't had a chance to prepare like they need to, do you mean they haven't had a chance to prepare like they did back in 2007 when the Raiders drafted Jamarcus Russell with the top pick? Or maybe back in 2000 when the Cleveland Browns used the top pick on Courtney Brown? Were they able to prepare that year? I mean, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a ton of time to evaluate Jameis Winston just back in 2015, and they've already let him walk away from the franchise. So don't give me the, well, hey, these teams don't have enough time to prepare nonsense, because NFL teams screw up the draft every single year without fail. If anything, I actually think maybe this year it actually makes them trim some of the fat and some of the nonsense, and maybe they just go with their initial instinct and they get the pick right instead of overthinking everything so much. Having said that, we're not quite sure who loves who this year because, like I said, teams aren't interviewing players like they usually do. So we will really have to dig deep this year to bring you our 2020 Daily Dose NFL Mockery Draft. That's what we're going to do. We're going to dig deep. We're going to look a little bit closer. We're going to try to figure out where these teams are going to go. So here we go. Let's get started with the first pick of the draft. And this year, that will, of course, go to the Cincinnati Bengals, who went 2-14 last year. And I mean, if you look at that team objectively, they don't have a whole lot to be excited about. I mean, the Bengals are owned by Mike Brown, and he has always been known as a penny-pinching owner, and I mean, most of his players hate playing there. They hate his guts. The Bengals need improvements literally everywhere. They're still trying to figure out what they want to do with veteran quarterback Andy Dalton. They need to rebuild their offensive line. Their defense is terrible. I mean, really, if you put positions up on a board and you just threw a dart, the Bengals need it. So who will Cincinnati take with the top pick of the 2020 NFL Draft? With the number one pick of the 2020 NFL Draft, yeah, there's not much suspense here. The Bengals are going to select LSU quarterback Joe Burrow. Now, Burrow has lived in Ohio before, and he says he's okay with playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. Burrow, in fact, said he has never had a losing season while playing football. Even going back to Pee Wee football, he's never had a losing season. He says he's not a loser. Well, I want you to know, Joe Burrow, that's all in the past, because you will be a loser in Cincinnati. You will be. We move on to the number two pick, and now the Washington Redskins are on the clock. Hey, Washington's another team. They have a ton of major internal problems. Remember, they went 3-13 last year, and this is a team that had their starting offensive tackle refuse to play the season at all last year because he didn't trust the team's medical staff after they had misdiagnosed a cancerous growth on his head. Washington fired their head coach, Jay Gruden, and now they have hired player favorite, former Carolina Panthers head coach, Ron Rivera. Sure, we know what Ron Rivera will do. He will, at times, gamble unnecessarily on fourth downs. He will lose a few games just, you know, being dumb. But then he'll pull off a fake punt here or there. Maybe he'll go for two when they should kick the extra point. And the players, bizarrely, will love him for it. Now, Washington really needs help on their offensive line, and they need someone who can rush the quarterback on defense. Here is the question that I have for Washington this year in the draft. They do like first-year quarterback Dwayne Haskins, right? They do, I think, right? Maybe? I don't know. He wasn't great last year. He looked really immature. He showed a couple flashes here or there. But did he do enough that Washington is fully committed to him? Ron Rivera wouldn't like try to bring in Cam Newton or something, would he? I think Washington just says, okay, we're okay with Dwayne Haskins. He'll figure things out. So let's go ahead and take the top player in the draft. The Washington Redskins will select Ohio State defensive end Chase Young. Hey, that guy is insanely talented. He can get to the quarterback. He is nearly unblockable, and he should be a great fit for what Washington needs right now. Except for one thing, he will eventually hate it there because owner Daniel Snyder has basically created a poisonous environment. So it's not going to like be something that lasts for a long time, but I think they get the best player they can get. And Chase Young, he'll survive for a few years and then he'll go somewhere else. Speaking of poison, the Detroit Lions are up next at the number 3 slot. And if there is a more toxic franchise in the league, I'm not even sure who it would be. The Lions have been playing football in Detroit since the 1930s, but they haven't won anything of significance, literally, since the Eisenhower administration. But hey, maybe this is the year, right? Oh, of course. Now, the Lions went 3-12-1 last year under former New England Patriots defensive coordinator Matt Patricia. And in that season, they actually lost starting quarterback Matt Stafford for half the season with broken bones in his back. So I hate to, but I have to ask this. Could the Lions look at a quarterback here? Would they consider maybe moving past Stafford because he's really expensive? And now we don't know if the merchandise is damaged. It easily might be. They also do need to completely rebuild their defense. They have actually been grabbing ex-Patriots like Trey Flowers and Jamie Collins as much as they can. But they also still need cornerbacks because remember, they traded away starting cornerback Darius Slay. They need defensive line help. And doesn't it seem like Detroit always needs a running back? I mean, really. Detroit hasn't had a good running back since Barry Sanders. I think at this number 3 spot, the Detroit Lions might be willing to trade down. But I could also see them selecting Ohio State cornerback Jeff Okuda. He is a lockdown guy and he will fit what the Lions need out there at cornerback. Well, right up until he finishes his rookie contract, and then he will be fleeing the Motor City as fast as his American muscle car can get him out of there. But for now, he'll be a nice fit with the Detroit Lions at the number 3 spot. The New York Giants are up next. And while the Giants went just 4-12 last year, and they are just 12-36 in the past 3 seasons, we aren't really all that used to the Giants being bad. And that should change soon, shouldn't it? They do think they have found their quarterback of the future in Daniel Jones, and he did show some flashes last year, but he was also sacked 40 times. So they desperately need offensive line help. They could use wide receivers. They could use another tight end. They need pass rushers. There are a lot of holes to fill with the New York Giants. Now keep in mind, the Giants did also fire head coach Pat Shurmur, and they went and hired former Patriots wide receivers coach Joe Judge to take the reins of this franchise. Let me see if I have this straight. The Giants hired the coach of the one unit on the Patriots that was terrible. Interesting direction to go. I'll just say interesting. But I'm going to say that the Giants try to keep Daniel Jones from getting killed, so I think they will go with offensive tackle Jedrick Wills out of Alabama. Then we get to find out what will actually be really, really interesting. Is keeping Daniel Jones healthy actually a good thing? We don't know. We think it is, but we're kind of not sure. I think they'll go offensive line help. That will be the number 4 pick. Next up, the Miami Dolphins are up at number 5, and we all remember they were in the tank for Tua business. But then they kind of screwed up and they won 5 games, and they dropped down to the 5 spot, and we thought that could be trouble. The one thing I'll give Miami, the Dolphins play really, really hard for head coach Brian Flores, even if they don't really have all that much talent. And now we know they might have got lucky because of those injuries to Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. He had that hip injury, and it's really tough to calculate that injury long term. Like, we know he's doing some workouts. We think he's playing a little bit. We don't know how he's going to be over the long haul, though. And there's speculation. Maybe the Dolphins go with someone else. Maybe they go with a different quarterback. So far this offseason, the Dolphins have actually spent a lot of money on their defense in free agency. Now, their offensive tackles are terrible. And one thing to think about, their schedule this year is going to get way, way tougher. So will they go offensive lineman? Will they go with Tua? Will they go with a different quarterback? Well, I am saying that they will still go with Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. And I think head coach Brian Flores takes one more year, tries not to get himself fired, and then hopefully they survive with Ryan Fitzpatrick for a year, and then maybe Tua is ready to go in 2021. The crazy thing is that Miami could look better this next year, but they might be worse record-wise because that schedule is going to get really, really tough. Here is the good news for you Miami fans, though. You're used to losing, so it's not going to be anything new. On the clock at number six, we have the Los Angeles Chargers, who have now lost their quarterback of the last 15 years as Philip Rivers has left for Indianapolis to play for the Colts with his brood of children, which also means that the Chargers stadium could be even more empty this year. So what do the Chargers do in the draft? I would think they probably should take a quarterback here, because how do you sell Tyrod Taylor to your fans? And I'm not saying Tyrod can't be a starter in this league, but it's going to be tough to get your fan base excited about him. And remember, the Chargers are now moving into that new stadium. You kind of want to generate some excitement and fill up those seats. Now, the Chargers could also go get a wide receiver in this draft. But if you do, you're still going to have to get your quarterback at some point. Tyrod Taylor is not the long-term answer. And one other thing the Chargers are going to have to do, they're going to have to get ready to pay some of their young, talented players. Those contracts are coming. So I think because of those reasons, the Los Angeles Chargers will draft a quarterback. And I think they will draft Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert here. And just see, hey, maybe bring in the guy that could be the heir apparent. Maybe that generates some excitement for the hometown fans. Spoiler alert, it will not. The Carolina Panthers are up next at number seven, and they have a number of questions to try to figure out the answers to. Remember, the Panthers cut quarterback Cam Newton, and they signed free agent quarterback Teddy Bridgewater instead. Then, they also gave that fat contract to running back Christian McCaffrey. Now, new head coach Matt Rhule is known for having high-powered offenses, so we'll see if he's able to bring that to Carolina. They need to fortify their offensive and defensive lines, and don't forget, linebacker Luke Kuechly is now gone. He has retired. Also, Carolina did go out and try to get some offensive line help. They signed offensive tackle Russell Okung, so they will probably need an offensive tackle very, very soon because Russell Okung is terrible. But I think the Panthers will actually go out and try to replace Luke Kuechly here. I think they go with the crazy athletic Clemson linebacker Isaiah Simmons. Did you see what this guy can do? You're talking about a linebacker that is as strong as a defensive lineman, but that can run like a safety. Isaiah Simmons could be a great pick for the Panthers here. It sounds like the Panthers are going to be switching to a 4-3 defense. Simmons could be that man in the middle. That should be a nice pickup for the Carolina Panthers. The Arizona Cardinals have the number 8 pick, and they have some decisions to make. Do you invest in protection for your crazy, talented young quarterback, Kyler Murray? Or do you try to go get some help for that front seven of a defense that allowed more yards than any other team in the league last year? Well, I say the Arizona Cardinals will take Iowa offensive tackle Tristan Wirfs because the Cardinals now have wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, who they got for a smile from Houston, by the way, and they can pair him up with Larry Fitzgerald. Hey, if they could protect Kyler Murray, this offense might actually be worth watching. When was the last time we said that? I mean, so what if the defense gives up like 50 points a game? They'll figure that stuff out later. At least we'd have an entertaining offense that people might want to come see. I think you have to go offensive line help. I think the Cardinals will take Wirfs with this spot. Next up is one of the worst rosters in the NFL, and they do have some picks this year. The Jacksonville Jaguars have completely fallen apart since they somehow made it to the AFC Championship a few years ago.
Will they ever win the Super Bowl?
Jason, I can't predict the future, but no.
But they seem to think that they have their future quarterback in Gardner Minshew. In fact, they're so confident in that, that they shipped out veteran Nick Foles to Chicago. But the Jaguars basically need everything. So I don't think there's a wrong move here. I could see them trading this pick. I could see them tanking this year and then trying to get Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence next year. But if they're going to make the pick, I think they'll go with Alabama wide receiver Jerry Jeudy. That gives Minshew a weapon on offense that he can go to. Don't forget, they might end up trading running back Leonard Fournette. But honestly, unless the Jaguars can draft a new head coach to replace Doug Marrone, does any of this really matter? I don't think it does. Jacksonville has a long way to go. We are now up to the number 10 pick, and that pick goes to the lovable loser, Cleveland Browns, who last year at this time, remember, people were talking about the Cleveland Browns being Super Bowl contenders. Yeah, how'd that go? The Brownies need a lot of help too. They need offensive line help. They need new linebackers. Their safeties definitely need an upgrade. Could they even gamble and maybe take a wide receiver here? Well, here's something to think about. We all know that Louisville offensive tackle Mekhi Beltman was a combine hero in April. But then he had that drug test flag, so that means he will be in the NFL's substance abuse program for like 60 days or something like that. Now, think about this. The Browns already have a wide receiver on their roster who had a video with a female and a mound of cocaine in the background. The Browns also have a defensive end that smashed an opponent over the head with his helmet. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that drafting a guy who just had a flagged drug test is the least of their concerns. I think the Browns take offensive lineman Mekhi Beltman, and it makes perfect sense for this franchise. No doubt about it whatsoever. I mean, that's kind of the direction that the Browns are going in these days. They're kind of taking knuckleheads. So I think this is the perfect fit for the Cleveland Browns, and that is going to be the number 10 pick of the draft. Okay, coming back, we have now made it through the first 10 picks of the NFL draft, but we do still have a few more picks to go because we're actually going to go 5 picks deeper into this NFL draft. Plus, we also have our Daily Dose top 5 to get to today. You know, they're saying that this draft could be the year of the wide receiver. Hey, we've already seen one wideout get picked in the top 10. And trust me, we're going to have a few more wideouts go in the first round. But here's the question I have. Do you need a top pick to get a top wide receiver? Well, our Daily Dose top 5 says no. So let's finish up our 2020 NFL mockery draft. And we have now reached pick number 11, where we find the hapless New York Jets. Now, the Jets were 7-9 last year. And while that might sound bad, that's actually really, really good for this franchise. Because in the previous 3 years, the Jets had won just 4, 5, and then 5 games. This team, once again, basically needs everything, except they probably don't need a quarterback because they believe Sam Darnold could be their future. They especially need offensive linemen, defensive backs, and they need to find some skill position guys to put around Sam Darnold and give him some place to go with football. Now, they tried to go get some help for their offensive line in free agency, but big surprise, no one wanted to be a Jet. They did also lose wide receiver Robbie Anderson in free agency. So I actually think the Jets will select Oklahoma wide receiver C.D. Lamb here, and they'll just ignore the fact that Darnold will get sacked another 30-plus times this year. Hey, if things break right, though, this could be the year for the Jets. I mean, if things really go well, everything kind of melds together. They maybe find some help on defense. They get a little help around Darnold. Things start to pick up. Darnold figures things out, and you never know. We could have the Jets having a 500 season. Woohoo! John Gruden and the Las Vegas Raiders are up next at number 12. And you know, if the Raiders need one thing, we all know what it is. This Raiders team allowed nearly 260 yards through the air every single game last year, because that Raiders secondary is one of the worst in the NFL. And we know that the Raiders, they used to do things that were kind of crazy in the draft. Like, they used to look at just the fastest wide receiver every year and just grab him. I mean, even when they had other needs, they just said, well, find the fastest wide receiver and let's take him. Think of like the Jacoby Fords or the Jesse Hesters or the Darius Hayward Bays. The Raiders love speed. Forget if the guy can play or not, they love speed. But lately, it kind of seems like the Raiders are starting to figure this whole draft thing out. They're starting to get it together. They're not just doing that silly fastest wide receiver thing anymore. That's a very, very good thing. So, with the 12th pick of the 2020 NFL Draft, the Las Vegas Raiders select Alabama speed wide receiver Henry Ruggs. The defending NFL champion San Francisco 49ers actually moved up to the number 13 pick this year because they traded defensive end DeForest Buckner to the Indianapolis Colts. So, I mean, they could look at defensive line help here to replace Buckner. But remember that the Niners also lost wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders. He left for the Saints in free agency. So they really need defensive line. They really need wide receivers. They could use some offensive line help. I think that the San Francisco 49ers make a great pick here. I think they go get highly productive LSU wide receiver Justin Jefferson. Hey, that kid can stretch the field. He scores touchdowns. He can get deep on you. This should be a great pick for the NFC champion San Francisco 49ers. And don't forget, I know they lost the Super Bowl, and there's like some people making jokes about the Niners and that kind of thing. But hey, make no mistake, this was a team that was a mess. This group that has come in and reformulated what they're doing in San Francisco with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, that's an innovative group back there in the Bay Area. Remember in Super Bowl 54, the San Francisco 49ers were already practicing social distancing on that 3rd and 15 when they decided not to get within 20 feet of Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill. Hey, however you want to say it, the San Francisco 49ers are ahead of their time. The suddenly interesting Tampa Bay Buccaneers are next up at the number 14 pick. Now, I know the Bucs haven't been interesting in like years. They pretty much underachieve every single year. But Tampa Bay went out and they got Tom Brady to replace Jameis Winston in free agency. And then another positive, they admitted a huge mistake on those terrible alarm clock uniforms. But instead of going back to the creamsicle orange with the Bucko Bruce on the helmets, they went back to the previous pewter power threats. Okay, well, the Buccaneers need offensive line help bad, because their right tackle is a serious problem. And getting Tom Brady killed in the first month, probably not going to be the best idea. So I think they go pick Georgia offensive tackle Andrew Thomas, because that's what Tom Brady is going to tell them to do. And at his age, Tom Brady is going to get really, really cranky if you don't do what he says. Our final pick of the 2020 Daily Dose NFL Mockery Draft belongs to my hometown Denver Broncos. Yeah, pretty funny how that all worked out, isn't it? But the Denver Broncos have had a pretty solid offseason so far. But the draft hasn't been the friend of this current regime here in Denver. Denver went 7-9 last year under rookie quarterback Drew Lock. And Drew Lock showed some promise. Like maybe John Elway has finally found the quarterback of the future here in Denver. Then in the offseason, they went out and they signed some defensive help. They picked up defensive tackle Jarrell Casey. Should be a nice pickup. They also added running back Melvin Gordon from the Chargers. Should be another nice pickup. But they do still have a number of holes to fill on this roster. They need offensive line help. They need inside linebackers. They need defensive backs. And they need some wide receivers. Well, with all those needs, how can the Denver Broncos possibly screw this up? Well, I am of the belief that at this stage in his career, John Elway, he's just mostly drunk, isn't he? So I am going to say that John Elway attempts to trade back in the draft to draft Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, who the Broncos, by the way, absolutely do not need. But Elway has no idea how to use his computer, so he's trying to use a fax machine. He spends most of his evening trying to fax his trade demands through his toaster. The league never gets his request, and the Broncos lose the number 15 pick in this draft. Hey, remember, this one's for John.
This one's for John.
Now, as we do every week, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5.
Five!
You know, the 2020 NFL draft is going to be very, very memorable. For one, it will be the only thing going like live in this weird time. For another, it will be the first draft to be held completely virtually with no one actually in real contact with anyone else. But I also think that this draft has a chance to be remembered for another reason. We have a shot at this being the year of the wide receiver. You know, I actually think we have a chance at seeing 5 or 6 wide receivers selected in the first round alone. And that could be 6 or 7 if Denver Broncos general manager John Elway actually figures out how to like use a computer.
This one's for John.
But here is the question that I have for you today. Is it necessary to use a top pick on a wide receiver? We know that wide receiver is one of those positions you can come in and you can contribute like right away. As soon as your rookie season starts, we've seen guys come in and do that. And we have seen top picks turn into great wide receivers. Think of guys like Julio Jones, Calvin Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, Tim Brown, James Lofton. They were all selected with like top 6 picks. But do you need to burn a top pick to find a great wide receiver? Well, our Daily Dose Top 5 has 5 examples that say, no, you absolutely do not. But you do have to do your homework. You do have to dig a little bit. Right now, we are going to count down the Daily Dose Top 5 wide receiver steals. Now, I would say draft steals, but some of them were so good, they actually didn't even require a draft pick be used. Starting off at number 5. And we find a small school guy that bet on himself, and he actually won. After lettering in football and track in his Pennsylvania high school, he was offered a scholarship to the University of Missouri. But instead, he chose to stay closer to home, and he attended Division I AA Hofstra. And in 4 seasons, he recorded 182 catches for a school record 2,800 yards. He scored 18 touchdowns. So he declared for the 2006 NFL draft, where the New Orleans Saints grabbed him in the 7th round. Now, think about this. This was just 4 picks from the very last pick of the draft. But Marcus Colston could play, and he jumped in and he contributed right away. He had over 1,000 yards receiving, and he caught 8 touchdowns in his rookie year. And when the Saints made that improbable run to the Super Bowl back in 2009, in the Super Bowl, Colston had 7 catches. He had 83 yards in the Super Bowl against the Indianapolis Colts. He would go on to play 10 seasons in the NFL. And Marcus Colston is the Saints' all-time franchise leader in receiving yards. He has 9,759. He also leads them in yards from scrimmage, in receiving touchdowns. He has 72 in total touchdowns and in total receptions. Who expected that from a guy that nearly wasn't even drafted? Marcus Colston comes in at number 5. Okay, let's move on to number 4. And we have a guy that was deemed too small to really be a prolific NFL player because he stood just 5'9". He just weighed 170 pounds. Hey, there's no way a guy that size is going to be able to hold up to the rigors of the NFL. He went to the University of Louisville. I mean, not exactly the biggest football factory. He was drafted with the 223rd pick in the 8th round of the 1983 draft. He was selected by the Miami Dolphins, and he actually paired up with another member of that class to form one of the most prolific duos of all time. After first making the team with his returning skills on special teams, Mark Clayton went on to pair up with Dan Marino, and his 1984 single season record of 18 touchdown catches wasn't broken until 1987. That came from Jerry Rice, but it is still tied for the 3rd highest total in NFL history. Mark Clayton is in the NFL top 50 in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. He holds Dolphins records for career pass receptions and touchdowns, as well as receiving yards in a single season. And you might remember, Mark Clayton paired up with fellow wideout Mark Duper to form the popular Marx Brothers. He was a 5-time Pro Bowler. He finished his 11-year career with 582 receptions, nearly 9,000 yards. He had 108 rushing yards too, 40 kickoff return yards, and 485 punt return yards. Oh yeah, and he also scored 85 total touchdowns. You know, he actually holds another distinction in his career. Mark Clayton is one of just three players in the history of the league who has caught a touchdown pass from both Dan Marino and from Brett Favre in the regular season. He finished his career in Green Bay with the Packers. The other two that did that, Keith Jackson and Mark Ingram. But Mark Clayton, drafted in a round that no longer even exists, went on to great things in the NFL. Moving on to number three, and our number three entry had made some noise in college, but we all just kind of thought, well, that's just the system that he plays in, so no one really cared. He wasn't even drafted. He signed with the San Diego Chargers as a free agent in 2004, and he got cut from their roster. So instead, he went and signed with the Miami Dolphins, and he proved that the Chargers and the other 31 teams had all made a big mistake. In fact, only one player in NFL history, Gale Sayers, had more all-purpose yards in his first three NFL seasons. In 2007, the Miami Dolphins would trade this guy to the New England Patriots. And that is where Wes Welker really started to shine. Right off the bat, he put up bigger numbers than he ever had in Miami. And that was saying a lot. He played six highly productive seasons in New England before he actually moved on to Denver and finished his career with Peyton Manning. But in all, Wes Welker, who was never drafted, despite the fact that he had put up huge numbers in college back at Texas Tech, in his career, Wes Welker caught 903 passes, had nearly 10,000 yards receiving, and he scored 50 touchdowns. He was a five-time Pro Bowler. For a guy that wasn't even drafted? No, he's too small. He's just a product of that goofy system he played in down at Texas Tech. Yeah, or Wes Welker turned out to be really, really good. He comes in at number three. We move on to our number two selection. And we have another guy that wasn't even drafted. Yet somehow, he is one of the top wide receivers to ever play the game. See, our number two guy had a good college career. He finished with conference records in receiving yards and touchdowns. He also broke the school's reception record, and he was named first team All-American, but he did it at Missouri Southern State. So, I mean, who cares? That's small-time football. But then he was signed as a free agent by the Denver Broncos back in 1994, and he would play for 12 seasons in Denver. And the thing about this guy, he wasn't that big, he wasn't that fast. But somehow, he managed to accomplish quite a bit in his career. He was the first undrafted player to reach 10,000 receiving yards. He held records for the most receiving yards, with over 11,000, and touchdown receptions, with 68, of any undrafted player in NFL history. He holds Denver Broncos franchise records in career receptions, receiving yards, and touchdown catches. He ranks first on Denver's all-time yards from scrimmage list. Hey, you could make a case that back in 1998, when the Denver Broncos won Super Bowl 33 over the Atlanta Falcons, you could make a case that it was Rod Smith, not John Elway, that could have been the MVP. I mean, he did have five catches for 152 yards in that game and a touchdown that broke the game open. The thing about Rod Smith, though, he wasn't the biggest. He wasn't the fastest, but he had something that draft experts have to do a better job of evaluating. He had heart. He had a work ethic, and he wasn't afraid to go block. He wasn't afraid to go over the middle for a tough catch. Now, do they have those drills at the NFL Combine? Hey, go down here and do some blocking. No, they don't do that. Do they have the drill at the NFL Combine? Here's what we're going to do. Go over the middle, and we're going to have a safety deck you. They don't have that. You can't measure that. So a lot of times those skills don't come through, but they came through in his career for Rod Smith, and he comes in at number two. We reach our number one wide receiver NFL steal, and we have a guy that went on to greatness, but in high school, they say he was more concerned with playing the clarinet in the school band than playing football. He finally played a little bit of quarterback late in high school. And when he chose to attend Southern University in Louisiana, he decided to walk on and try his hand at playing some sports. I mean, with his size, he was 6'8". You know, some of the sports gave him a chance at a little school like that. So he ended up playing on the basketball team. He was the team center. Then he threw the javelin and the discus for the track and field team. And then in football, instead of putting him at quarterback, they shifted him over to wide receiver, where he was a 4-year starter. He didn't even lead the team in receptions, though. Now, he did get voted to the all-conference team as a senior, but he was barely landing on the NFL's radar. No one was looking at this guy. Big guy, but small school, and he played against small competition. So the Philadelphia Eagles would select him with the 161st pick of the 7th round back in the 1971 NFL draft. And with his size, he actually turned out to be completely dominant because he could go up above smaller defensive backs. He would go and rip the ball away from them. Harold Carmichael went on to catch nearly 600 passes for 9,000 yards and 79 touchdowns. He played in the NFL for 14 years. And this year, he's actually being voted in to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Not bad for a clarinet player.
Shut your mouth, you mediocre clarinet player.
Now, the 2020 NFL draft is scheduled to start tomorrow. And we are going to see some serious talent come off the board at wide receiver. But don't think that you have to have one of the top draft picks to be a star at that position. There are gems to be found if your team will look hard enough, if they will dig deep enough. Keep an eye on some of the wideouts that might get selected later, or maybe not at all, because they might not have the big names, but they just might come out and surprise everyone. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will, of course, be recapping the NFL draft and looking at some of the biggest winners and the biggest losers from what should be a very, very memorable event. Plus, we will have some sports news that you know is going to be coming out, and we will have another Daily Dose Top 5 for you too. Hey, everyone out there, stay safe, stay healthy, get in a workout, get some sleep, which is really, really important, and keep your heads up. We are going to get through all of this. Hey, don't forget to go over to YouTube and subscribe to our Daily Dose channel. Look for our Daily Dose logo over there, and I will leave links everywhere so that you can find our channel and you can get the correct one and subscribe to it over there. Hey, have to say thank you all for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts and the tweets. Thank you so much for subscribing to that YouTube channel and giving us positive reviews over there. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
Shut your mouth, you mediocre clarinet player.